And good morning, Bruce.
And good morning, Cora. And listeners, wonderful to have your company here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1 for our regular Thursday morning community conversations program. And I'd like to begin the program this morning by acknowledging the passing of Indigenous Elder Auntie Dot Peters, who passed away on Thursday the 19th of September. And there's a memorial service for her next Tuesday, 1 o'clock, down in Don Road at the Sports Centre. So you can read all about that actually in the Mountain View's Mail, of course. I missed you last week because I was in Canberra with the Philanthropy Meets Parliament's annual summit, and what an inspiring event that was. And but it's great to be back here, because over the last couple of weeks there's been so many things happening around the valley, and congratulations to all of you who are involved in some of the events. The Ecos Sun Festival that happened last weekend was amazing. The Archies that were launched 2 weeks ago and are happening there at Tarawarra Museum of Art until the 5th of November. The Tourism Network Yarra Valley Edible Forest event that was held a couple of weeks ago, and the Healesville Community Bushfire Group that hosted their Living with Fire event just 2 weeks ago as well. That was an amazing night where we learned about how to plan gardens and do landscaping in fire prone areas. So that's just a small taste of some of the things that have been happening around the place. So as always, we have a special guest in the studio here, and her name, known to some of you, is Megan Buntine. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Bruce. How
you Wonderful going? To have you back.
Yeah, great to be here again. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, it's getting warmer.
It is. Thank goodness it's getting warmer. No more snow, hopefully, for this season.
I know, and I know you've driven an hour to be here, Megan. It's wonderful to have you here in the studio. And for those of you who haven't heard of Megan, she's a trainer. She does all sorts of amazing things for not-for-profit groups, strategic planning, governance, workshops and things. And we'll give you her contact details later. But for this morning, Megan and I thought that it'd be really good to talk, well, I did at least, Megan, I don't know whether you did, but to talk about meetings and things.
Yeah, I think it's quite timely too, because a lot of our community organisations have got their AGMs sort of coming up in the next few months. So I think it's good timing to have a bit of a chat about meetings.
It is, because it's something that we all do, and perhaps just to whet our appetite. I mean, I could throw to you and say, I think we have too many meetings, Megan. Do we have too many meetings?
I think a lot of people would probably agree with you on that one. I think at the end of the day, you've got to find a way to make it work for your organisation and not overload yourself with meetings, because not everybody loves meetings. In fact, not many people I talk to love meetings.
Especially in the middle of winter and things.
Yeah, exactly. So it's about how can we do it as effectively and efficiently as possible, because at the end of the day, we still need to have those meetings because they're critical to our community. And that's what oils the wheels, I guess, if you like, of our organisation's functioning. So meetings are critical. It's just about how do we do them in the best way to make them as effective as possible.
So we've got, if we start at the one end, we've got one-off meetings. We've got one-off sort of meetings events like the Living with Fire bushfire community meeting that was held at Memo Hall 2 weeks ago. We have election meetings. We have meetings in our workplace. We have, as you were alluding to a moment ago, we have meetings with our clubs, with our organisations, which might be once a month or once a fortnight or once a week or something, Megan. So there's all types of meetings, aren't
there? Yeah, I think different organisations have different sorts of meetings. A lot of the organisations I speak to, well, they'll have their annual general meeting, obviously, and then perhaps monthly committee meetings. Some organisations, their committee might meet every 2 months. Other organisations might also have subcommittees, so they meet periodically. Some organisations will have general member meetings throughout the year as well to share information and communicate with the members. It just depends upon the nature of the particular organisation.
And we're going to talk about, after our first song selection that Megan's given us this morning, we're going to talk about what makes for a good meeting, and conversely, how do we get ourselves out of a meeting that's not going so well and make it more effective or something like that? And a big shout out to Community Sector Banking, the people that are listening this morning, heads up to you and all the other groups around that are doing amazing things. And you're here with Bruce Argyle and Megan Buntine, and we're talking about running effective meetings and what does that exactly look like. And before we actually go to that, can I just say that we have a wonderful opportunity. Megan is offering, through the support of the Foundation for Rural and Regional Renewal, the opportunity for your group, your community group, your not-for-profit group, to have some special no-cost No cost at all, Megan.
Absolutely no cost. All you got to do is provide a venue and some tea and coffee.
There you go. For governance training, the roles of people who are on boards and committees, and what a wonderful opportunity. I think you've got the capacity to have five more groups, I think.
I've just had another one picked up, so we've got four sessions left. So okay. If there's any community groups out there, not-for-profits out there, who would like a training session, so we cover off good practice, compliance, planning and risk. They're the sort of the key things.
About a 3 to 4 hour kind of
three-hour
seminar?
Session, yeah. So we can sort of make it at a time that suits the particular group. So I'll work with one group at a time so we can tailor the content to their needs and respond to their questions and, yeah.
Fantastic. At their location as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
Terrific. All right. So we are talking meetings. And Megan, let's start at the beginning. Do you think that the most important thing, you know, is to decide why are we meeting? What's the purpose? Why are we even getting together?
Yeah, I think that you've got to be really clear about that, because otherwise you're coming together, you're not necessarily focused, it puts people off. You know, it's hard enough to get people to join committees as it is, so you want to make your meetings as effective and efficient and purposeful as possible so that people see the value in them.
And do you think that the structure that goes with the meeting, so excuse me, I know often we say that we give a meeting time, our start time, but we don't actually have a finish time, for example, and we don't sort of plan an agenda that gives the times that we're going to spend on things, the most important things, for example.
Yeah, I think that's another really good tip too, really being clear about how long the meeting's going to go for, so people know what to expect when they come along. There's nothing worse than thinking you're going to a meeting that's going to take 2 hours and you're still there after 3.5 hours. I think that if you have meetings that run over time, you really need to look at how your agenda's functioning. Maybe you need to tighten that up a bit more, to the point of even putting timeframes against each agenda item. You know, we're going to spend 5 minutes talking about this and 10 minutes talking about that, and keeping people on track. And if people are tending to talk over time or monopolise the conversation, you've got to have a really good chair who's got the skills to sort of pull people into line in a respectful way, of course, but really manage. It's quite a skill to be able to manage a meeting well.
I've been to meetings in the past where I turn up at the next meeting and actually no one's done what we talked about at the last meeting. That's very frustrating.
Isn't that frustrating?
Yeah. So how do we get around that, Megan?
Well, I guess it's about getting people inspired and taking responsibility for the actions that are delegated to them. And I know, you know, myself, sometimes you put your hand up to do things and when push comes to shove, you realise that you've overcommitted. So it's about how do you sort of work through that. But as much as possible, sharing the load, so it's not all falling on one person, but, you know, making people accountable for what they said that they would do.
Okay. And that comes back to roles as well. So talk us through the, if you like, the legal requirements when it comes to organisations, entities, whether they're associations or whatever, there's particular roles that we have to have, aren't there?
Yeah, for sure. So I think first and foremost, incorporated bodies need to look to their rules of association, because that will tell you how you're supposed to run your annual general meeting, your committee meetings, any general meetings that you might have. So that's the thing that you need to think about covering off first. Mm-hmm. Clearly, your rules also talks about what the role of the president or the chairperson is in those meetings, and also the secretary and the treasurer. So again, go back to the rules. It's the primary governing document, if you like, to help you with those sorts of things. Some organisations will have local guidelines as well, or, you know, procedures, policies, those sorts of things about how they run their meetings, which I think is really good to have things in writing that everyone's clear about how we operate. It's consistent. If people come and go from time to time on the committee, the established processes continue, so that enables good functioning for your organisation and your meetings.
And we have a legal requirement for organisations in relation to AGMs. Just talk us through that, annual general meeting.
For sure. Yeah. So it's really critical that you make sure that you're compliant with those legal requirements. And again, go to your rules. You know, there's standard requirements that come directly out of the Act, or there might be tailored requirements if your rules are specifically created, if they're not just the standard model rules. So it's things like making sure you give people enough notice, 14 days generally for an AGM, or 21 days if you've got a special resolution that you're going to put to the meeting, you know, making sure that if you're, well, you will be probably, most organisations have their elections at their AGMs, so mm-hmm. making sure you go through the proper process to do that effectively, so getting people to nominate on the appropriate forms, get those signed off, and just to make sure that everything operates as it should. It's interesting, I was asked to chair an election at an AGM last week, and it was the first time I ever went to an AGM to chair it where we had more nominees than positions. So we actually had to go through the whole ballot process. So that was an interesting process. And then we actually got to the point where there was a draw for the second last place. So then we had to go to a second ballot to decide. So it was quite a convoluted process. So it was interesting both for me chairing it and also for the others observing it. So having an understanding of, you know, if you're asked to chair someone's elections, just getting a copy of their rules and finding out what they actually have to do according to their rules, so that if you end up in that tricky situation, you know what to do.
Megan, I can remember a few years back that I was standing as president of the then Healesville Chamber of Commerce, and it was a dead tie for the president. We agreed. I'm not sure whether it was in the constitution or not, that we'd pull the name out of the hat, and I'm not sure whether I won or lost, but I ended up being the president.
So. Okay.
But anyway, we're talking meetings this morning. My special guest here in the studio is Megan Buntine, and Megan's got a lot of experience working with not-for-profit community groups, organisations, not just with running meetings, Megan, but strategic planning and governance and a whole lot of other things beside. But I'm just going to read a little quote out here from a resource, Seeds for Change, and it says, "A good meeting not only gets the work done, but also involves, supports and empowers the participants, creating a high level of energy and enthusiasm. A sense of community and connection to fellow group members is the basis for successful group work and change." Do you agree with that?
I think that's a lovely quote. I think that really, if you can come out of your meetings having inspired people, then you've brought that X factor into your meetings that often isn't there. And sometimes, you know, it's interesting when I do strategic planning facilitation, for example, with groups, and I come out the end of it feeling energised because I've picked up their energy in the room. Other times I can come away from it and feel absolutely exhausted. But you can tell when the room's been energised, and you see it then sort of over the coming months as they roll out their plan. They're really engaged, they're really energised, they're really committed, they've really got some skin in the game and want to see it succeed.
So does that mean that it's important for a meeting to have the right people in the room? You know,
like, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for whoever's chairing the meeting, or the leadership group at least, to focus on that, you know, wanting to inspire the rest of the team, get them thinking about the possibilities and excited about what they might be able to do for their organisation. I certainly see that whenever I'm working with organisations to help them with those sorts of things. You know, I find it exciting doing the preliminary work with them and doing the post-session write-up, because you can just see the possibilities coming out of it.
Yes, yes. Mm. Do you see also on the other side, do you see sometimes groups lose their way and lose their purpose and go off track a bit?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Excuse me. I've sat through some horrendous meetings as well, as I'm sure everybody has. I remember one AGM in particular that was just an absolute nightmare. But anyway, I think, you know, those sorts of meetings are really tricky, and I think it's hard. The chair needs to be a really good chair to be able to manage that stuff. And I think if you can predict that you might be having a tricky meeting, do some preparation for it, have a bit of an understanding about how to pull that back in, you know, go and do some swatting up on Robert's rules, for example, of parliamentary procedure, because at the end of the day, that's the model that most of our meetings run on. It's not a legal requirement per se, but it's a good practice process that you can use. So having that understanding about how to pull people into order, how to, you know, tell people that they've got 90 seconds to talk and then it's the next person's turn, and really having a tight rein on that when you need to. I think sometimes the challenge is that 9 times out of 10, we don't have to have that level of formality in our community-based organisations in our meetings. So when it does get a bit tricky, we're not that practised at dealing with it. So it can be a bit challenging when you're the one who's sitting in the chair going, oh, how do I deal with this?
And that's sometimes why people actually back away from groups and organisations, because they don't like
how
things are run. There's a great little quote here. Was the meeting successful? What got done? Did you get the necessary results? What problems were solved? And were the objectives of the group actually met?
Yeah, I think that's really good tips as well. I mean, in my mind, the measure of good meeting is, did we finish on time? Did people come out of it feeling positive? You know, that's pretty simple stuff. You know,
yeah.
And did we sort of have some actions and some achievements coming out of that? So I think that if you can do that, then it's about, I guess, looking after the participants in the meeting so they want to come back next time.
And have the ownership for the outcomes that are that are talked about as well.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. We have lots of community groups meeting all over the valley every week, Megan. You know, there's sports groups have meetings, there's Toastmaster organisations have meetings in a number of places, but there's Probus Club meetings, there's Lions Club meetings, there's Rotary Clubs meetings, there's
tourist
hospital board meetings. You're on a hospital board,
yeah.
I know. You know, all sorts of meetings that happen, and sadly, often it's the productivity, it's the you know, was that meeting worthwhile, you know, at the end, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think sometimes it can be worthwhile having a bit of a reflection on that, particularly for the executive, so like the president and the vice president, secretary, treasurer, having a bit of a reflection on, well, how did that meeting go? Could we perhaps do it better next time? It can be timely when you have a committee changeover to reassess, well, how do we run our meetings? Is there a better way to run it? You know, can we build new elements into it that make it exciting and appealing to people to get people to come along? The whole range of things. Again, it's unique to every different organisation, a little bit different, so it's not a one-size-fits-all solution, but I think just in the context of your organisation, having a bit of a review from time to time about your meeting effectiveness is a really good strategy. For example, with the hospital board that I'm on, we actually have it on our agenda at the end of each meeting to review how effective were we. So
I think it's a good, really good thing to do.
Yeah, yeah. So it gives you that sense to sort of, you know, how can we do things better next time? I guess as someone who's always had a focus on that idea of continuous improvement, it's another simple way of doing that.
Megan, if I've just been elected as a president or a chairperson or something of a community group, a not-for-profit or any kind of organisation for that matter, at the last AGM or I know I'm going to be next month or something like that, where do I go to get, you know, advice or support or training, dare I say, as a, you know,
well, you get on the phone to me. No. Look, there's a whole range of places that you can go. First and foremost, I would make sure that you're au fait with the legislation, the Association Incorporation Reform Act, and also with your rules of association, because that is a requirement of when you get onto a committee that you are obliged to make yourself familiar with those. That's not to say you need to know it back to front, but you have to have a basic understanding of what it contains and know that it's your go-to reference. I think there's organisations out there like Our Community that have a huge amount of resources on their website. I think networking, if it's the first time you've been in such a role, networking with other organisations and linking in with their people in the same role that you're in and getting some guidance and some peer support is always a good thing to do. There's plenty through the local council. Most of the local councils are pretty proactive around supporting community-based organisations. So there's usually a suite of training programs that come around from time to time for community-based organisations. You know, getting involved with groups like Toastmasters or like Rostrum, who they're a little bit like Toastmasters, but their thing's really focusing on the meeting stuff.
Yeah.
So there's a whole range of things. And as soon as you start talking to people, you'll find more stuff out there.
Fantastic. You're listening to Megan Buntine, and if you're wanting more information, as well as all the resources that Megan's just referred to, there's a whole lot more on her website, which is mjbconsulting.net.au, and lots of free resources there too, Megan, aren't there?
So for sure, yeah.
And you're with Bruce Argyle here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, our regular Thursday morning community conversations program. And look, lots of things coming up as we head towards the final 3 months of the year, starting next week, of course. Habitat for Humanity, the amazing organisation, not-for-profit organisation that's building houses for the homeless, have an event on the 11th of October. You can have a look on their website to find out all about that. We have the Area Toastmasters speech competition coming up on the 12th of October at Wandon, and you can just go onto the Toastmasters website and find out all about that. But if you want to hear some of the area's best speakers, you have an opportunity to do that on the 12th of October. And did I say I'll be participating? So come along and have a laugh. There you go. It's the humorous speech competition on the 12th of October. We have closer to home, Bill Heppel's sports show on tonight here at 7 o'clock instead of tomorrow night. So don't listen tomorrow. Listen tonight at 7 o'clock due to the grand final holiday, which is fantastic. And Healesville Toastmasters are having a fundraising raffle at the moment, and to support the work of Toastmasters and helping organisations with their public speaking and organising and so on. And we're talking about that this morning. And you can get tickets from any of the Toastmasters, or you can pick up some from the Bendigo Bank in Healesville. And while we're talking about Toastmasters, Megan, you are a member of Toastmasters, and of course that is one way of learning some of the skills of running meetings and so on too, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I am a member of Toastmasters now, which is great. I just love it because, I mean, I talk for a living, but I think, again, it comes back to that idea of continuous improvement. There's always room for improvement. So it's been an interesting 12 months or so that I've been involved with Toastmasters, learning new tips and tricks from the more experienced members of the group to be able to incorporate into the work that I do. So it's, yeah, great organisation to be a part of.
And you're quite an experienced speaker. You run these workshops, and we were talking about those before. If you've just joined us, there is a wonderful opportunity for four community groups, four not-for-profit organisations to have a free governance workshop with Megan, a 3 to 4 hour workshop at your location. You have to be in the greater Healesville region,
I think. Healesville and sort of around Healesville area, because of where the funding comes from.
And that funding is supported by the Foundation for Rural and Regional Renewal. So if you want to know more about that, get onto Megan's website, probably, Megan, www.mjbconsulting.net.au, and you'll find out all the details there, or you can email Megan.
Send me an email,
well,
give me a call, yep.
That would be terrific. Megan, I'm just wondering about the decision-making processes that happen in meetings. There's all sorts of styles of decision-making. There's, what we call consensus decision-making. There's where we actually have a vote on a particular matter or whatever. What in your experience, has been the best way that groups come to decisions, decide what they're going to do or not do?
A really timely question, actually, because I'm starting the company directors course next week, and I've just been doing some pre-reading over the last few days in preparation for that. And one of the things that I've been working on is a little webinar around board and committee decision-making processes. And I guess I've always had the belief that, consensus is the way to go, getting everyone to sort of come to that agreement. But they're taking it another step further and saying, well, consensus is not the ideal. Collective decision making is a better way of coming to an agreement.
So tell me the difference between consensus and collective.
I still haven't quite got my head around
that
one.
I'll ask you next time.
Yeah, so ask me next time. But it's really interesting that what I've taken from it so far is that consensus is more about compromise, whereas collective decision making is we're all putting our bit in and we're coming out with a better better solution than if we're compromising.
Takes on board all the suggestions from various
trying
people.
To bring everybody's the diversity of opinions in and pull that together into one sort of decision moving forward. So it's a really interesting process to go through and conversation to have. So I'm still not to the end of that yet.
Yeah.
So let's hold that in abeyance for next time.
Because there's one meeting I go to where they actually have different coloured cards where they hold up, a particular colour if they agree, or a different colour if they disagree, or whatever. I've actually seen that too.
And, some organisations will just go on a simple voting process too. Let's make a decision. Okay, who's in favour, who's against? Majority wins too. So, again, it's one of those situations where I think it's whatever works best for your organisation. But I really like this idea of collective decision making, so I want to learn more about that.
All right, we'll ask you that on another program. That's terrific, because this is also about ownership, isn't it? It's about an organisation having an agreed path or an agreed purpose, or they're going to take on a particular project
and I think
everybody has to be on board for.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you go back to that idea of consensus, where perhaps we've got to compromise some of our ideas, if you're particularly passionate about what you want to see happen and you've had to compromise on some of that, I question whether maybe your commitment might not be as much as perhaps it would be if you'd come to a more collective decision.
And I suppose one of my favourite stories as a former mediator is the fact that a compromise is not always the best solution and doesn't always meet the needs of the people. And so if you've got a conflict, for example, those of us that have flattered in former times, and you know, the argument was always, one of the arguments was always over the, you know, toilet seat up or toilet seat down, and you know, the 45 degree toilet seat doesn't really work as a compromise.
Correct.
Thanks for being a part of Community Conversations here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1. It's been wonderful to have your company this morning. Megan Buntine has been my special guest here in the studio. Actually, next week, just to give you a heads up, I have the amazing Karen Garth from Huey, who will be our special guest. So there's so many interesting people around the valley. We're just so fortunate. And if your group or yourself would like to be a guest here on our program, we'd love to hear from you. So we're always looking for people, and would love to be a part of the program. So a reminder, lest I forget later, Bill Heppel's sports show is on tonight at 7 o'clock instead of tomorrow night. So, Megan, we are almost out of time, but there's a couple of important things we want to wrap up with in terms of running effective meetings and so on. And I'm just wondering about the model that Toastmasters use in terms of rotating the chair and using mentors and things like that. Are these approaches that other groups could be looking at as well, do you think?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a really good idea to rotate the chair within your organisation, because it gives everybody a bit of practice and the opportunity to learn those skills. I mean, often in your rules of association, it'll say that the president's role is to chair the meetings, but if you can exercise some flexibility around that to sort of share that role, and it's a good way of potentially the up-and-coming president getting some experience in that important role of chairing meetings too. Yeah.
Wonderful. If you are a new chair or a new president or a new committee member or a new executive member or something like that, Megan, you have underlined a couple of times the importance of getting to know your constitution, your rules of association and so on. Is that the starting point for all of us?
Yeah, it certainly is. And in fact, I would say it comes even before you get on the committee. I would say that you need to have some sort of a new members pack in which is a copy of your rules so that everybody has access to that. Whether they read it or use it or not, it's another thing. Yeah. But the rules is effectively a contract between the organisation and its members. So how can you hold people to account if they don't know what it says? So I think that's important there, but also it is actually a legal requirement of you when you join a committee or a board to have an understanding of what your rules says and also what the legislation says. So you need to make sure you're across some of that stuff. And the other question that we were just talking about behind the break there with the song was around the importance of mentoring. And I think that, you know, if you can buddy yourself up with someone who's done the role before or perhaps is more experienced than you and learn from them, that's a really good tool to help you in your new role.
Fantastic. Can I put you on the spot and just ask you to can you just perhaps share, you can name the organisation or not if you like, but just off the cuff, can you share an organisation that you think has really become really purposeful and has looked at the way they operate and has, or perhaps changed the way they operate and has been more effective as a result?
Well, I just think, to use the Toastmasters example, again, we've recently gone through our annual elections, and so we've had changeover of all the committee positions, and we've looked at some different ways of doing our meetings. pardon me. Introducing different elements to the meetings has been, I personally have found it sort of gives you a new energy and it's something different, so it encourages you to come along, perhaps. Not so much to say what we're doing in the past wasn't great too, but it's, again, I come back to continuous improvement.
Fantastic. And that's probably the step that a lot of groups don't take. They do, sadly, we all do, get into a rut. I mean, we don't actually like change, actually, so much, us human beings. So to actually do that, sometimes needs to be a conscious decision, doesn't it?
I think it does. And I think part of it's that, you know, that theory about group dynamics, that if you go to an organisation or a group forms for a certain purpose, once that purpose is achieved, what happens then? It's almost like you've got to reinvent yourself and create another purpose. Otherwise, your group's likely to fizzle out. So I'm just thinking about our Landcare group, for example. We reactivated in about 2010 after the bushfires up our way because the area was just overrun with blackberries. So we had this new purpose to be able to go forward. So that was our driving force. But then once we had the blackberries under control, it's like, well, okay, what do we do next? What's our next project? So we found something else to work on.
Yeah. You've been listening to Megan Buntine, and who's been my special guest this morning. Thanks so much for coming in, Megan. We are out of time, unfortunately. And
thank you for having me once again. It's been lovely.
And listeners, have a great week, and we'll look forward to your company again next Thursday.